Welcome back to season 3 of Snubs and Dubs. We've been talking about the snubs and dubs of the 74th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobias, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, it's Halloween.
Boo. Oh, I'm sorry, listener out there. That probably terrified you right down to your core. But today's Halloween. It is filled with spooks and scary monsters about, so this is just a nice warm-up for your day of creepy crawlies.
Maybe you're listening to this while you're out trick-or-treating or something. You know,
you'd be a giant nerd. I hope no one gives you candy, and I hope a couple people wedgie you for that.
But it is the season. Did you watch anything in the last week?
The only thing that I remember watching, though I have a nagging feeling that I'm missing something, is that you and I, after recording last week's episode, we went to go hang out with our good friend Michael Myers and see how he died in Halloween Ends.
Yeah.
I guess might as well just get into spoiler world, because if you've cared to follow the Halloween saga this far and don't care about I don't know. I feel like if you don't care about the series, you're not going to watch it and don't care about spoilers.
Yeah. If plus, in 20 years time, they're going to reboot it and say that this isn't canon anymore.
Of course not.
Jamie Lee Curtis is going to be like 90 or something, and they're going to still be chasing her down.
So, yeah. And she's still going to be the only thing pulling money into this goddamn franchise. So spoiler filled thing. Mm-hmm. He dies.
Yeah.
It's Halloween Ends. That makes sense.
Yes.
He does not die in a way that I would call satisfying or good, though. Because if you remember from the movie immediately before this, the whole town shows up, stomps his ass. They hand him a beating.
Yeah.
It is merciless. I can't remember the last time one city has banded around killing a person before to that extent, but they fail because extreme violence does not kill Michael Myers.
Yeah.
Until extreme violence kills Michael Myers in Halloween Ends. He just like gets cut and then he dies. It's they put him in like a wood chipper that like, or not a wood chipper, some.
It was like a metal
crushing
grinder thing. Yeah,
fucking, I don't care. The Michael Myers grinder. That's the only thing it's good for. But they like, they show it off in the beginning of the movie. So you're like, oh, they're going to put him through a grinder. And then you waste 80 minutes of your life and then they put him through a grinder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the weird thing about this movie is it was not necessarily about Michael Myers as the villain for like 80% of it.
No.
There's this other guy, this random guy named Corey, who like, I kind of in concept liked the idea of what they were going for, of having the town and certain people in particular be affected so much by the anxiety and the fear and the hate that Michael Myers has created that certain people are driven to more violence and replicating that behavior. But they also wanted to try and do Jamie Lee Curtis finishes off Michael Myers in the same movie. So it was clearly like a couple different visions, and it makes sense that there were so many writers on it because I think all of them had a different idea about how Halloween should end because certain people had cool ideas about if Michael Myers had died in the last movie, where this movie could have gone. It could have been interesting if he was dead, but then people still continued in like his legacy. But then,
that's exactly what I was hoping for and thought would be a better ending in the aftermath. I was thinking like this would have been a better movie if he was like, it would have actually made the ending of the last movie worthwhile.
Yeah.
If that did kill him, it was just shortly after that movie ended. So no one knows that he's dead. Mm-hmm. And now everyone thinking that there's still monsters lurking has turned them into monsters that do the killing, and the resolution's them realizing that he's dead and it's just them causing their own sadness and grief.
Yeah.
But no, this time slashing his neck kills him.
Yeah.
This time she really believed in the power of murder enough to pull it off. And they try to do, it was like some Jigsaw shit, because Jigsaw did the thing where there's like a protege of the main criminal going around doing the murdering. But in this movie, he also dies.
Yeah.
Unsatisfactorily, because he dies in a decently satisfactory way.
Yeah.
And then is briefly revived to die in a worse way.
Well, it's like, it was never clear on like the mythology of Michael Myers. And I get that they probably want to leave it ambiguous, but if Michael Myers has been able to survive so much shit and you are expected to believe it's been like 4 years, this man has survived all of these wounds and like his body's been chopped up. He's been stabbed in the throat. Like he's got fingers off and like he's living in a sewer. What is he eating? How is he surviving?
You'd think man goes to a donkey restaurant all day with how much ass he's been served over his lifetime.
Yeah. And so like, you have to kind of believe there's some sort of supernatural element attached to the act of violence that he's committing, and that somehow he is being rejuvenated by killing people. And it was an interesting concept if that was being passed to Corey,
mm-hmm.
and that's why Corey was not dying on the first time, but they just committed to killing Corey and Michael anyways.
Yeah.
Which is like, I don't know, it would have been interesting and obviously franchise potential continuing if they had kept Corey alive and kind of built on that mythos.
Yeah.
Then to like, and you know, you can kill Michael, but then, oh, maybe this guy's going to take on the legacy of whatever. And then we have Halloween Returns in the next few years or something. I don't know. Not to say that I didn't want that. It just feels like they had a good idea for one movie,
mm-hmm.
but they were like, nah, franchise. Like, we need a trilogy.
Oh,
and so
easily.
They absolutely milked it. And they got out a couple of more things that they wanted to get out in Halloween Kills. And then this was just kind of a completely new idea.
Yeah.
But they still had to mix it in with this trilogy. So I don't know. It was just messy.
I think in summary, this movie was lame. But if you've made it this far, you know that.
Yeah.
You're prepared for that. Mm-hmm. So it's fine. If you've liked the ones before enough to go back for this one, you're going to have a good enough time.
Yeah. And there was only like one good sequence of killing. And that was kind of it.
Yeah, they had more fun kills in the one before this.
Yeah.
Like, this one was kind of, there was one scene. I don't even want to ruin it because it's kind of the only real value of the movie is the kills. There's like one scene where you know it. It's where Corey first starts going off. And there's some decent ones in there. But yeah, I don't know. It's Halloween Ends, baby. Michael Myers is dead.
Do you think they're going to do more?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think it'll be more in this series or more as like a reboot?
No, it's done. I think this series is done. I feel like Jamie Lee Curtis has to be done. They're probably going to reboot it in like 5 years. And then it's going to be a similar but different thing.
Yeah, probably. It'll never die. I'm sure.
It's like too, Michael Myers.
Too valuable a franchise.
It'll never die until it's just unsatisfactorily written off somewhere when they stop making money.
Yeah. But you didn't watch anything else?
Not that I remember. Okay. So, no.
Well, I have to go revisit the score that I gave this for my rewatch, but I rewatched Scream.
Oh, interesting.
Almost like a year later, girlfriend Molly and I have been getting to introduce her to some slashery type horror movies. And so I put on Scream because I know it's quality and she enjoyed it.
Good.
I was a little hesitant at first because I think its satire-ness can sometimes turn people off if they're expecting just like a horror movie.
Yeah.
But like you get roped into it and Skeet Ulrich is pretty hot. So
I mean, of course.
So yeah, it's great and still holds up on a rewatch. Really enjoyed it. The other thing that I watched was Black Adam last night.
I'm curious, Kyle. Is it good?
No.
I didn't think it would be.
It is also a very messy movie. Like, it's got some upsides and some downsides. I really liked the characters in the Justice Society that they introduced, but obviously it's not their movie.
No.
And they also get kind of annoying. Like, I really liked Hawkman to start, but then he just keeps repeating the same points over and over and over. And it's entirely on the writing because the actor is really cool and the costume's cool and the fight sequences with him were cool. But the fact that he was just so like, he was like a broken record with some of his beliefs. And I get that they're trying to drill home the point that Black Adam is an anti-hero and Hawkman believes that heroes don't kill people, you know, they just keep them alive and let them face justice. But like, it just kind of got muddied down. And honestly, there were some weird inclusions. They have like a kind of a standoff scene that's playing homage to the Clint Eastwood, the Good, the Bad and the Ugly scene, which they play on a TV earlier. And then there's like weird slow-mo scenes that are trying to replicate Zack Snyder's style of his DC movies.
No.
And then The Rock is just like monotone. It's weird because The Rock is, you know, very charismatic, but also he plays kind of one character now.
He plays The Rock in every movie he's in.
And so in this case, like he's very stoic and angry type person, but he can't be too bad because then he's like actually a villain. And I don't think The Rock can be a villain anymore as like because of his image or something. And there's the whole Fast and the Furious people counting how many punches were thrown so that there's equal punches. So I don't know. I'm sure there was something in there too, but like it was just pretty mediocre. Like I was straight down the middle with it. Like there was parts I liked, there was parts I didn't like. I like Pierce Brosnan as Dr. Fate. He was pretty cool. I think most people say that he's the standout of that movie, but I don't know. Yeah. Did The Rock save DC? No.
I feel like The Rock's got to do a big change. He can't just be that one character and still be the bit. He's getting tired.
Yeah.
Like, he's got to pull a John Cena heel turn. Because Peacemaker, that was fun. That captured the imagination. He should not have been given a Twitter account. Because I think, what did he like promise peace to Ukraine or something?
I don't know.
I can't. He went off somewhere about like, oh, if the Peacemaker wasn't after some terrorist attack or whatever, it wouldn't happen. And it's like, buddy, this is sounding like Mark Wahlberg after 9/11. Like, calm your shit down.
Yeah. John Cena is such a weird figure because on one hand, he does stuff like that, or like he has weird Chinese connections or like support for that. But then on the other hand, he's done more Make-A-Wish appearances for kids than any other living or dead person ever.
Yeah.
Like, so the man contributes a lot, but also, I don't know, he's kind of a weird, he's a bit of an enigma. So
I know, but at least he's got more range than The Rock does. I'm more excited to see John Cena in something than I am to see The Rock in it, because I know if The Rock's in it, this is the ceiling of its potential is like a six.
Even more to that point, Dave Bautista has more range, I think, than either of those two.
I think you can tell that he enjoys doing a variety of roles that challenge him instead of him like waking up as The Rock, going to a movie set as The Rock, and then going to bed as The Rock.
Yeah. Ugh. It's kind of, the whole tailored image is kind of ucky.
Yeah.
Ucky, icky.
Ucky, icky. What they should have done to revitalize The Rock is have him voice Mario in the new Super Mario movie.
But other than that, I've been playing a lot of Marvel Snap. Have you heard of this game?
Nope. What's that?
It's like a mobile card game.
Oh,
with Marvel characters.
Interesting.
It's just like my new phone game
obsession. Oh, like the Snap. I kept trying to think like Pokemon Snap, and I was trying to wonder how photography worked its way into this. But no, it's the Snap, as in Thanos. Okay.
Yeah, and it's really fun because it's like a quick, like 3 to 5 minute game. And so you like you pop in, you play a couple rounds, and then you pop out. It's good. It's fun. I've been sucking a lot of time into it. So, so I literally was playing before you showed up, and I'm thinking about playing it now. Clearly, so.
I mean, also 3 to 5 minutes is not a quick game. That is a very respectable amount of time that a lot of people should appreciate. 3 to 5 minutes of enjoying something. You know what else we watched this week, Kyle?
Yes.
This movie.
Yeah, of course, season 3 of Snubs and Dubs. Been covering the films from the year 2001. And so for episode 12, we are talking about The Others, just in time for Halloween. A perfect little spooky movie, unlike Monsters Ball, which was not spooky.
There was no, there were no literal monsters.
Yes.
There was some ball. We did get some nakey time. There was some ball going around. But The Others... There were the, there might have been others.
Had you seen or heard of this before?
No to both, and thank God.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Have you?
I hadn't seen it before, but I did hear about it, and unfortunately, I knew what happens.
Oh man, we're on a bad roll. If you have to take all the brunt force of knowing, and I go in blissfully unaware of what I'm watching.
Yeah.
I don't even like when I go to watch the movie, I got to check to see what it was again. I don't know any of this.
Yeah.
So I've had so many great experiences with surprises and you have not.
Yeah. And I was in a weird state, which I'll get to once we kind of talk about it. But yeah, it was kind of strange because I was trying to balance between not knowing it and watching it knowing. And so like I was trying to like suppress feelings, but also like trying to, anyways, if you were interested in The Others, I've included links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. A reminder that this is going to be a spoiler filled conversation, and more than I think any other movie that we've talked about so far. Do not listen to this episode if you haven't seen this movie. I think it is well worth watching.
Yes.
And it is well worth not knowing a single thing about what happens in this movie.
Seconded.
Yes. So go ahead and watch it, please. I don't care if you don't listen to this episode for a little while. Just make sure you watch it. Mm-hmm. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you can skip around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into The Others. The Others is a 2001 English language Spanish gothic supernatural psychological horror film written, directed, and scored by Alejandro Amenábar. That guy did a lot.
Yeah, that's incredible.
It stars Nicole Kidman as Grace Stewart, Fiona Flanagan as Bertha Mills, Christopher Eccleston as Charles Stewart, Annika Mann as Anne Stewart, James Bentley as Nicholas Stewart, Eric Sykes as Edmund Tully, and Elaine Cassidy as Lydia. It has a runtime of 105 minutes and released on August 2nd, 2001. Jason, What did you think of The Others?
Okay, first of all, Tommy Wiseau, eat your heart out at that directing credit. Scoring it too?
Yeah.
That's unreal. I will say, general thought, I was having a mid time with it until the twist. Yeah. And then I had a great time. My notes took a sharp turn to from like, oh, this is okay. Like, the child acting's fine, whatever. Mm-hmm. Holy shit, this goddamn rocks.
Yes. I kind of had that same feeling, even knowing what happens. I was kind of watching it and I was like, okay, this is good. Like, Nicole Kidman's really good.
She's very good
and
in this.
And the child actors are kind of holding their own against her, like, for the most part.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it is still child acting in a horror movie, which sometimes can be spotty. But I found especially the daughter was quite good.
She was strong. I got real tired of Nicholas.
Yeah.
But Anne was very good.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, I think it's hard to get too far without talking about the spoilers, because I think that's what we want to talk about. Because as you said,
I think the heart of it,
a lot of this movie is built on that. Because overall, like, it is, it's a very atmospheric film. It's well acted. I really like the house that they built or the set design of it all. Its vibe is really good, but it does kind of like feel like it drags for a little bit when you're kind of waiting to figure out things. But once it happens, holy shit. Mm-hmm. But anyways, should we go through the plot?
Let's get through the plot so we can get to the good shit and then drop some bombs.
Sure. So Jason's going to read straight through the plot. If you don't need the refresher because you have watched it already, please skip right to discussion by following the time code in the show notes. But here's The Others.
In 1945, Grace Stewart awakens one day from a nightmare in the immediate aftermath of World War II. She lives in a remote country house in Jersey, a Channel Island formerly occupied by the Germans. She is with her two young children, Anne and Nicholas, who have an unspecified disease characterized by photosensitivity. Grace hires three new servants, housekeeper Mrs. Bertha Mills, gardener Edmund Tuttle, and a mute girl named Lydia. Mrs. Mills explains to Grace that she worked in the same house many years before. When odd events occur in the house, Grace begins to fear there are unknown others present. Anne claims to have seen a group of people in the house several times, a man, a woman, an old woman, and a child called Victor, who claim that the house is theirs. After Grace hears footsteps and unknown voices, she orders the house to be searched. She then finds a 19th century photo album containing photographs of corpses. When Grace asks Mrs. Mills about her previous experience in the house, Mrs. Mills recounts that many left due to an outbreak of tuberculosis. At night, Grace witnesses a piano playing itself and becomes convinced that the house is haunted. She runs outside in search of the local priest to bless the house. Before leaving, Grace instructs Tuttle to check a small nearby cemetery to see if a family has been buried there with a little boy named Victor. Tuttle finds the cemetery but covers the gravestones with leaves at the order of Mrs. Mills, who assures him that Grace will learn the reasons behind the unexplained events in due time. Outside, Grace runs into her husband, Charles, who she thought had been killed in the war. Charles greets his children after a long absence but is distant during his short stay at the house. Later, Grace checks up on her daughter, Anne, whom she has left to play in a spare room. Instead, to her horror, Grace finds an old woman on the floor in the room wearing her daughter's communion dress, veiled down. The old woman claims in Anne's voice, "I am your daughter." Frightened, Grace attacks the old woman, only to find that the old woman is merely an illusion, and Grace has inadvertently attacked her own daughter. Later, Anne tells her brother that their mother has gone mad in the same way she did that day, but he does not recall. Charles says he must leave for the front, even though Grace claims that the war is over. The two embrace and lie motionless together in bed. The next morning, Charles has left, and the children are screaming that the curtains are gone, thus letting in the sunlight. Grace accuses the servants of having removed the curtains against her wishes and expels them from the house. That night, the children sneak outside and discover the headstones in the cemetery belong to the recently banished servants. The children run away in fear when they turn to see that the servants are approaching them toward the cemetery in the foggy dark of night. Meanwhile, Grace finds a photograph that has slipped out of the book of the Blue Dead and fallen onto the floor under some furniture. The photograph displays the corpses of the three servants, Mrs. Mills, Tuttle, and Lydia, who perished during a tuberculosis outbreak in 1891. The children run upstairs and hide in the bedroom where they are discovered by the other elderly woman. Mrs. Mills returns to the house and tells Grace to go upstairs and talk to the intruders. Grace discovers that the old woman is in fact a medium in a seance with Victor's parents, who has found out via automatic writing that Grace smothered her children to death with a pillow in a fit of despair before committing suicide. Grace realizes that the others are the family that has moved into the house and that she, her children, and the servants are in fact dead. Following this display of supernatural and spiritual activity, Victor and his family vacate the house and leave it in the occupancy of the ghosts of its predecessors. However, because they are dead, Anne and Nicholas' ghosts are finally allowed to play in the sun. Mrs. Mills informs the Stewarts that others will come back to the house and they'll have to learn to coexist together, but Grace ominously states that the house is theirs. As she says this, a for sale sign is seen mounted to the gate.
Damn.
Dang, that's a lot.
I want you to talk me through like your feelings. Firstly, when they see the gravestones and mm-hmm. also she sees the book. So that's the first kind of reveal that yep. the servants are dead. What did you think at that point?
Okay, so I want to back this up to when they first buried the gravestones under leaves, when Grace goes to get the priest and they start burning the gravestones. Like, okay, the servants, they're dead. Mm-hmm. Clearly, that's theirs. There's a lot of talk about dead people.
Yeah.
There's weird things about the living and the dead. Clearly, that's them. So I was not surprised when they came back to the graves and it's theirs because they kind of hinted that enough.
Yeah.
I was also definitely clued in on the fact that the kids used to be photosensitive but never actually had an issue when they were in the light. Mm. So I assumed that something about their status had changed and probably ghost related, but I didn't yeah. know exactly what it was. But like, whatever, punting to the end of the movie, that's fine. And then when they do get to the big reveal,
yeah.
like the door opens, the kids are there. They're the ghosts. There's a family doing a seance. That yeah. scene, dear Lord above, so good.
Yeah, it's really well done. It's really well shot too. And I even knowing what happened could appreciate it because they kind of linger on the table and the blocking of the scene with Anne standing to the side and them like talking back and forth. And even if you didn't kind of get it initially, you are given enough time to kind of take it all in. And so even knowing that that moment was eventually coming, I did still appreciate the gasp moment of it. And I really wanted to know what you thought about it because I really think that the value of that moment is in not knowing.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's such a revelation. And they put that scene together so goddamn good. Mm-hmm. Like, you get enough time to see what's going on to know that they're the ghosts and figure that out while still in the immediacy of the scene. Like, there's still a high level of urgency
yeah.
that these kids think that they're being attacked by ghosts or whatever, yeah. but they're just communicating to the people who are actually living. And you're just sitting there while this is going on being like, oh, those motherfuckers are ghosts. They're yeah. all dead.
Yeah. And it does feel like sometimes the movie was kind of building to that moment. And that moment did need to be well executed for, I think, the whole movie to really feel good. Mm-hmm. Because I think a large majority of the positive review that you're going to get out of this movie isn't just from, like, obviously it's well made, it's well crafted, well directed, well acted. The production design's really good. The score is great. And obviously that comes from a unified vision from the director. But a lot of your enjoyment of it will come from if you can make it to that moment and obviously accept and be excited by it. Mm-hmm. Because I was watching a review about it. I was rewatching the review that spoiled it for me in the first place. They were talking about how in that time, because The Sixth Sense had come out recently, the kind of idea of a plot twist where somebody was dead all along did kind of seem trendy in popular culture.
Oh, I didn't even think about and that so, timing wise.
Yeah. And so this twist could have felt contrived in a way
yeah.
and also repeated because of The Sixth Sense being only a few years earlier. I think even two. I think it came out in 99. Mm-hmm. And so for this to come out 2 years later and have a kind of similar twist, and especially with it hinging on the entire movie being that plot twist, it could have been like, oh, really? Like another yeah, one of these?
Again?
But I think because we have a healthy amount of distance from that, I think if you watch this now, even with The Sixth Sense also existing and having an effective use of that plot twist, it is kind of easier to digest that and also more fun, I think, mm-hmm. still, when you take it out of that pop culture moment.
And I think like one thing that maybe could have made it a little bit more interesting is to put like more scares and high tension moments yeah. in the movie. Because there's only a few like actually scary moments. Mm-hmm. There's the painting.
Yeah. I really like that bit.
I know. That was really fun.
Yeah.
And then there's also the old woman under the veil, which is like, it's right. creepy. It's not scary, but it mm-hmm. is definitely creepy. What I think would have been fun to play on is because they introduce the housekeepers as a questionable force where you don't know good, evil, alive, dead, what's going yeah. on there. They sometimes set that up as, are they the ghosts of the house? Are they related to the intruders?
Yeah.
While they kind of are, they're not in the setup in that Grace gets confused by like, oh, there's people running around above me. I bet it's Lydia.
Yeah.
Which first of all, like, If you're thinking, man, there's people doing a bunch of sprints over my head at night, why are you just blaming that on some housekeeper girl who works for you? It's like, ah, oh, man, Lydia, it sounds like someone's spinning their head around and vomiting blood everywhere. Can you tell Lydia to keep that to the daytime? Like, that's a terrible read on what the situation might be. But yet, kind of right in the end, so I'll shut it. But what I think they could have done is had more interactions between Grace and her kids and the family, and then frame that as a who's doing it kind of scenario.
Yeah.
Because I think they can lean more into, if the family noticed that there were ghosts there, they would probably try to do more to get rid of them.
Yeah.
So maybe have more scary interactions where someone's like, I don't know, slapping things around, screaming to get out of the house, even though you might read that as the ghosts trying to tell the family to get out, but actually it's the family trying to tell the ghosts to get out.
Yeah.
And I think they could have worked on that a bit more to put more scares into it.
I agree.
But there's never a single cheap scare, and I always appreciate that, so I'm not going to ride that too hard.
Yeah, it is definitely more of an atmospheric movie. It's more of a mystery than a horror. It's just like a supernatural mystery. And I do appreciate that, but I also agree that I think the whole midsection leading up to those reveals might have been more engaging if there were more kind of horror elements to it, and or like even just like playing on classic horror movie type scares. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to do like the, you know, cue the music and then you're supposed to have a jump scare. But when she was looking at the piano, like, I thought for sure that you might see somebody.
Yeah.
Because in ghost movies, you do see the figment of the ghost sometimes, like the figure. And so it would have been interesting if she saw like a piece of the man leaving, and not even just like the whole man, but just like his foot as he left the piano room.
Yeah,
that would have been more terrifying and also kind of in line with that painting shot as well, because it's like a shot. It's not like a whole like scare moment. It's just you're seeing the horrifying thing, but it's not telling you that you need to like jump up and scream and pee your pants or something.
Yeah,
it's just showing you what's terrifying and why these characters are scared and encouraging you along, which I thought should have been a little bit more fun. That's like the only kind of spot that I really feel the movie needed a little bit more energy was in that buildup. But it uses that reveal moment effectively enough that you can kind of forgive it for being a little bit, being a little slow at times building up to that. But in those times, like, Nicole Kidman is great. And it's very, very well directed. I really liked the style of the whole movie.
Yeah, I think the score is very effective in it because, like, since, as you said, like, the director's, this is his whole, he did everything.
Yeah.
It makes sense that everything works so well together because it's not multiple eyes with different interpretations. It's just one vision, which is great for this. And I also think that if he was making the choice between including more scares, but giving up the ending, or playing it too safe and keeping it a total surprise, it's the right call to make.
Yeah.
It wasn't like in execution perfect because of that, but you can't give up that ending or it's a bad movie. So I understand.
Yeah, totally. Well, I can't actually tell how much we've retreaded because listeners, for the first time ever, we actually lost some of our recording.
Ooh,
it was
spooky. It's gone.
It was so strange. It just stopped. And then we're trying to like re-say what we said, but it's kind of in the moment. It's hard to redo what you've already done. So I don't think we'll ever recreate what we lost on that.
Probably not.
But did you want to move into the reviews and stuff?
Yeah, hit us with those.
Okay. So on Rotten Tomatoes, critics, pretty good. 84%.
Solid.
Now, do you think the audience was higher or lower?
I feel like lower.
You are correct. It's a 77% on audiences.
I was going to say 78. So I was
pretty close.
Yeah, I was really close, even though I didn't say it. Still claiming credit.
IMDb 7.6 and Metacritic 74. So pretty much in kind of that mid to high 70s range for most people's thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
But where it really pulled, on a budget of $17 million. So actually pretty modest.
Yeah.
It made $207.7 million at the worldwide box office, landing it at number 18 for the year.
So I'm surprised. I wouldn't have thought a movie like this had pull like that. I kind of thought this would be a forgotten one that maybe came to relevance later, but had a longer life of shorter highs and not as lows. But no, that's a really big pull. So yeah, good for the others.
Totally. And it's weird that I hadn't heard of it before like a few years where I saw that review and you hadn't heard of it at all.
At all.
Because, you know, it's quite successful in financially and even critically, like pretty well acclaimed. And it's got Nicole Kidman, great star, but it's kind of disappeared. But also, it's not easy to watch here. Like we had to rent it, which, you know, sometimes when it's not streaming, it's harder to find this movie.
Yeah.
So hopefully it ends up on a streaming service sometime soon, because I think a lot of people should check this out. What do you think about our scores? Should we do them?
I think we should do them. Kyle, what is your enjoyment?
I give this a 3.5. I think it could have been higher if I was going in completely blind. I do still really like the movie. It does have some sort of slower points, though, and so I can't give it anything really above that, I think. What about you?
Well, I can go higher, so I will. I'm giving this a 4.
Okay.
That twist was so good. I was jaw on the floor. Yeah. I had a great time with that twist and a good enough time getting there because the atmosphere is so good. There is enough going on to keep you going. Even if you might wish there was more, there's still enough. The execution of that twist was flawless. Yeah. So I'm giving that a big old 4.
Cool.
What's your craft?
I'm going to give this a 4. I think it was also very, very well made, especially when you kind of consider it's a small budget, but also they did have pretty much just one location and they really used that location well. I thought it created a pretty good atmosphere. Maybe I'll give it a 4.5 actually. I'm talking myself into a higher score because I think with the vision it had behind it, it was very well crafted.
I'm also going to give this a 4.5 and we were close to the 5. I will say, Nicholas was kind of annoying, both not just in acting, but I thought the writing for his character was also kind of annoying, especially when they get to the scene where he's standing between the graves and the housekeepers that are kind of walking towards them.
Yeah.
He says the same thing like 4 times.
Yeah.
It got a little annoying. They should have made a better character. And also, like, even then, the execution would have been fine if he just was a less one-note character who kept doing the same thing through the whole movie. So that's going to hold it back from a 5.
Right.
But goddamn, it was close.
Yeah. Speaking of execution, what are our scores there?
Yeah, well, what's yours?
I kind of jumped the gun.
That's fine.
I gave this a 4. I do think it's really well written, and I do think that twist is really well executed. Acting is really, really good. I think they really kind of act the pants off of what they got, especially Nicole Kidman. She is absolutely giving it.
All day and night.
So I gave it a 4.
Yep. I am also giving this a 4 for the same reasons. Kyle, what's your rewatchability?
This is where I think I'm kind of losing points for this movie. I'm giving it a 2.5. I might be inclined to watch it again. I also might be inclined to recommend it to people who haven't seen it and also don't know. But having gone through it once, knowing, and then to think about going through it again, also knowing, is like, I don't know, the idea of it is not that appealing, but it's not one that I will definitely, what's the word? Like,
rewatch.
Put aside, or it is not one I'm just going to like put aside or just like diss or say that I will never watch that again for sure.
I am going to give this a 3. While I wouldn't care to rewatch it on my own, I would absolutely recommend this to a bunch of people, and I would love to watch this with a real horror buff who hasn't seen this. I will not look at the movie. I will stare at them, and I want to see what their reaction to that moment is too.
Yeah, that is the joy for me of rewatching this movie, is to experience it with other people who don't know, because then you can get their reaction. You can kind of live through them again.
Well, Kyle, that is going to bring your score to 14.5 out of 20 for a 73%. And that is going to bring my score to a 15.5 out of 20 for a 78%. This will also end at back-to-back weeks of rewatchability sub 2.
So good.
Bringing that up a little bit. Kyle, what I want to know is your ranking. Yours currently is Donnie Darko, Memento, Royal Tenenbaum, Shrek, Ocean's 11, Harry Potter, Spy Kids, Monsters Ball, Gosford Park, In the Bedroom, Ghost World.
So this is my new number 7 over Spy Kids, under Harry Potter. I do think it is a lot closer to Harry Potter than it is to Spy Kids. And I think that some movies are going to kind of break that up a little bit, because it is a very good movie. I think much better than Spy Kids, but I don't know if I had as good a time with it as I do with Harry Potter.
This is in a similar realm for me. It's hanging around somewhere in the Harry Potter Memento region. I think for now I'm going to play it safe, and this is going to be my new number 5. It's going to go between Harry Potter and Memento, but I'm going to need to think on that one when it comes time for the very end of that, because we could be moving, we could be shaking. I am not sure at the moment, but that is going to bring my ranking to Donnie Darko, Royal Tenenbaums, Shrek, Memento, The Others, Harry Potter, Ocean's 11, In the Bedroom, Spy Kids, Gosford Park, Ghost World, Monsters Ball.
Great. Should we move on to fun Letterboxd reviews though?
I think we shall.
All right. This was also kind of a weak letterbox. Mm. A lot of people just talking about the twist, and understandably so, but also not in any funny way. Come on, give us entertaining takes. It has a letterbox score of 3.7 out of 5. So I think just inching up above average on letterbox. This is the first one. 2 stars, watched by Diamond Bolt. I hope that's a play on the 2 Ben 10 characters, Diamond Head and Cannonbolts. Please tell me if you're a Ben 10 fan. They say, are child actors annoying, or are they just really good at playing annoying characters?
I have a problem with the child actors, especially because the boy kind of looks like Prince Charles. King Charles. You look at his face. And you look at Charles. Whoa, they look real similar.
All right. 4 stars by Andrew. Shout out to female-led horror films. Gotta be one of my favorite genders.
Oh, sure.
I don't know what they're trying to say. Is female your favorite gender, or is female-led horror films your favorite gender? And can I identify as a female-led horror film?
I think explicitly female-led horror films is that person's favorite gender. Amen. Power to you, friendo.
Last two, both 1 star. 1 star by M. Imagine trying to shoot a ghost.
Yeah, it doesn't work out so well, does it? You're going to need even more pellets in that shotgun. Yeah.
But also, she has enough physicality to hold a shotgun. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, some weird rules there.
Maybe it's specifically if you died from tuberculosis, that's the only thing you're weak to, because she died by shooting herself. So she's still vulnerable to guns while they have a buff for any range type attacks other than tuberculosis diseased based attacks and poison damage.
Can we hear your stats breakdown for the...
kids are weak as fuck to pillowcases, so they should stay out of bed a lot longer than they are.
Our last one, 1 star by Benny Dubs. Super hate scary movie. Won't sleep tonight. Hashtag super tired tomorrow.
It's not even scary. It's really nuts. Yeah. Spooky.
Unless you're terrified of paintings for some reason.
Oh, he might be, though. Oh, he might be.
All right. Academy Awards. What do you think? Did it do anything?
This had enough money that I feel like it probably should have got some buzz. Maybe lead actress for Nicole Kidman?
Well, unfortunately, to this day, the Academy Awards has yet to recognize phenomenal horror performances. So no, it didn't give any attention to The Others. The Others did get a lot of attention at the Goya Awards, which is essentially the Academy Awards for Spain. It was nominated for 15 and it won 8. Those 8 were Best Sound, Production Design, Production Supervision, Editing, Cinematography, Director, Original Screenplay, and Best Film. This actually makes it the first ever film to receive the Best Film Award at the Goyas with not a single word of Spanish spoken in it.
Interesting.
However, the script was originally written in Spanish by Alejandro Amenábar and then translated into English.
Even more interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the ones that it got recommended for there, I could have seen an Oscar nomination for a lot of them.
Well, the BAFTAs actually nominated it for Best Original Screenplay and Best Actress for Nicole Kidman.
Good.
And the Golden Globes nominated Nicole Kidman for Best Actress in a Motion Picture Drama. So there was some attention to her at the major awards. It also won 3 Saturn Awards, was nominated for 6. It won Best Horror Film, Best Actress, and Best Supporting Actress for Fiona Lanigan. It was nominated for Best Director, Best Writing, and Best Performance by a Young Actor for the actress that played Anne. So
yeah,
didn't win those ones, but the other three, it did. Any of that surprise you?
The only thing that's surprising me was no Oscar looks. It deserves something, but the rest, I'm glad that it did get appreciation elsewhere.
I'm definitely going to be keeping Nicole Kidman in my consideration for the end of the year. And also, because screenplay has kind of seemed a little bit weak so far, I might have that just floating around the realm. It's pretty effective screenplay.
That's true. I'm always just kind of considering Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
At any moment, I'm considering her.
Okay. Well, we'll get into interesting facts because some of them are about Nicole Kidman.
Nice.
So first one, Nicole Kidman originally tried to persuade Alejandro Amenábar and the Weinstein brothers to find another actress for the part.
Why?
Coming off of the bright and exuberant Moulin Rouge. The actress was initially reluctant to do a film that explored such dark places. We'll talk about Moulin Rouge later. Nicole Kidman actually quit the film during rehearsals as playing Grace gave her nightmares. There's a quote, "At one point, I didn't want to make the film because I couldn't even go there emotionally."
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, well, being terrified is actually a great way to be an actress in a horror movie. So,
I mean, she did a great job. So she did. I'm glad she didn't quit or job. Managed to convince the director and those two gross men that we won't talk about.
Yeah.
Next up, the disease the children have is an actual disease known as xeroderma pigmentosum, which is basically an extreme sensitivity to light. It is also very rare, with roughly 1,000 people in the world have it. And I have a quote here from me. Goddamn pick me children here. So, if they couldn't be annoying in any other way. To get the kids worked up, Alejandro Amenábar would play scary music to them when they weren't expecting it. Oh, so just terrifying children on set. Hilarious.
God, dream job.
And lastly, this movie is executively produced by Tom Cruise. This marked the last collaboration between him and Nicole Kidman prior to their high profile divorce.
I was about to say, and why was that?
Yeah, their divorce was finalized the same week that The Others was released in theaters.
Oh, well, good for them.
Yeah, so that's it. That's all I had to say about The Others. Do you have any final word on The Others?
Well, by the way that she killed her kids, you could call it The Smothers.
Were you saving that? Were you?
I could not find a way to work it in. That's why she. It's why I got booted to the end with a terrible transition. Perfect. Kyle, what do you got?
Nothing that good. So I'm gonna do the outro. All right. I want to thank you all for listening to season 3, episode 12 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pod, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We'd love to hear you guys' thoughts on The Others or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or any else. Actually, send us your theory as to why the computer didn't record the first third of the episode. I'm also at Kyle Tobiasen on Twitter, and Jason's at Wendy_Mills. Of course, all of those links will be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
What's the worst thing that can happen? What's the worst scenario? He's going to come here, ask me, I'm going to say no.
Do the job.
No, Don.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
I can't.
You can.
I can't. Don't do this.
Do what? What am I doing?
This.
This? This what?
I know a bloke who knows a bloke who knows a bloke. Now, you know this bloke.
Do I?
This is a bloke you know. Wants me to put a team together.
That's right. Next time we're talking about Sexy Beast, so make sure to watch it before next episode. And no, don't just look in the mirror. Listen. But we're also going to have a bonus episode coming out this week, so look forward to that. I can't wait for you guys to hear them. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.